All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to leave up holiday decorations year-round. Others have the need to use their garage as practice space for their new metal band. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.
This is a More Than Just Podcast production.
Welcome to Spotcast Season 7, Episode 19. My name is Tim Mitra. I am in Toronto, Ontario, and I'm joined by Jonathan Kuhlein in Jacksontown, New Brunswick.
Hello there, kids.
We also have Jaime Lopez Jr. on the line in Seattle, Washington.
How's it going?
We're not at war yet. Not at war yet. It's funny because I heard somebody on the radio today who was talking about their family. I just, you know, woke up, turned on the radio, and they were saying, or, you know, tuned in the radio, I guess is what you do these days. And they said, our family members in Detroit were asking us, you know, since we're at war, we can't, you know, whatever. So
do Americans think that trade wars are fought with guns?
Yeah. Represent the entire 30 million people and tell us?
We're letting our representative, Kendrick Lamar, fight this for us. It's going to be Robot Jock style where, you know, whoever has the better halftime performance at the big game.
Oh, damn. Does that mean that Drake is responsible for our defense? Because I don't feel good.
Must be present to win.
Yeah.
So irrespective of football, everything I ever learned about life and business was I learned playing hockey. And a year ago, there was a lady singing the American National Anthem at the Toronto Maple Leaf game, and the PA cut out. And the entire audience finished the song for her.
Yep.
This weekend, when there was hockey games on and the American National Anthem came on, we were booing the National Anthem.
Yeah. It's a sad and frustrating thing because I genuinely don't think we have ill feelings towards America or Americans.
We just
really don't like that guy and his people. And it's hard to protest because we're not good at it.
So somebody pointed out that, he doesn't realize this. Of course, he'll never realize this. But you don't know how badly you screwed up when you get Quebecois people saying they're happy to be Canadians.
Yeah. Now, what's next? Alberta?
We don't know about Alberta. I figure we'll sever Alberta and... Yeah, just sever Alberta.
Hey, we'll trade you Alberta straight up for Washington State, Oregon, and California.
Yeah, or even just Washington State and Oregon, yeah.
I mean, California's economy would be nice to have.
And
the weather's nice. I could do without the earthquakes.
I don't like the way they vote. They always vote Democratic, you know, I don't know.
Yeah. I saw a great rebuttal, and I don't want to get too far into politics, but I saw a great rebuttal in the Guardian last week where they were talking about how badly it would backfire if Canada became the 51st state, because they'd immediately have to give us senators and proportional representation in Congress, and it would immediately dethrone the Republicans. It's very funny.
Why is that?
Because so what's the number, Jaime? How many people per congressperson in America?
So senators are per state. So every state, regardless of size, the smallest one and the largest one get two each.
Yeah.
It's the House of Representatives that's proportional. And I don't know. They base it on the census.
Yeah. Even if it was, per 500,000 people, there's 40 million of us. So all of a sudden they would have to give us 80 seats in Congress.
Wow. It would be the largest state because it would be larger than California.
Yeah. So that would be interesting because all of a sudden, even if you factored out places like Alberta, you would still have a majority of, by American standards, far left, but by, the rest of the world standards, pretty edge of center left. And yeah, all of a sudden the House of Representatives would flip, the Senate would flip, and the voting base would add like 20 million left-leaning voters.
According to Wikipedia, California has 52 representatives. So you'd figure around 52 to 55.
Yeah. Hope you're enjoying the after show, folks.
52 to 55, roughly, is what I would guess.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think this is a case of careful what you wish for, Americans in red states.
Yeah. Well, I mean, again, The question I begs for me is, like, would we be one giant state or would we be 10 states? And or would Toronto be like Toronto, D.C., right?
Yeah.
The Dominion of Toronto or something.
I mean, isn't it already?
It, well, yeah. said the outsider to the person in Toronto.
That's yeah, right. Okay, so I'm a proud New Brunswicker now.
Moving on to fact check. Keen has basically contributed to that the show we watched last year with the AI generated brouhaha was Secret Invasion.
Yes.
Although I've seen a few that I wonder if, well, no, I guess they're not. They're too good to be AI generated at this point. Some of the shows I'm watching. So
yeah, I think there's a reason why we didn't remember it's that Secret Invasion was awful.
But yeah, you're right. I had sort of blanked that from my memory. All right, let's move on to the headlines. I have one here, a quick one here, and this is a Severance reference. You can read Rickon, who is Mark S's brother-in-law, who wrote a book on Severance called "The You Are," and it's in it's part of the story, and that's the book that they read, or Mark S reads at the any Mark S reads, and they start their little rebellion thingy. But you can, it's actually on I guess an audiobook, whatever, and it's read by the actor in character.
That's funny.
Yeah, so that's kind of a cool thing. So if you're interested in The You Are from Severance, you can download that as an audiobook. And we'll head over to Jonathan for some somewhat exciting news.
Yeah, well, we got a couple trailers this week, and Jaime's going to tell you about one in a minute, but I'm going to start with the Fantastic Four teaser trailer that we got earlier this week. This was our first kind of in-depth look at this. We had gotten some teaser images, and obviously we knew the cast and everything, but this was the first kind of real look at what we're dealing with, and I think your mileage may vary, but I thought it looked really interesting. It's kind of got that 1960s neo-futuristic vibe going on. It's got some pretty neat characters, including our first look at the Evan Moss Bacharach's version of the Thing, and we've got our look at Herbie, the flying robot, which for old-time comics fans / cartoons fans is a real treat. It looks pretty neat. What did you guys think of this first trailer?
Yeah, I thought it looked pretty good. I mean, it's got a vibe. It feels very, you know, retro futurism. It appears as if they're not doing an origin story. It seems like origin is like in flashbacks, but they're already, you know, just normal family, and this is what we do as a Fantastic Four superhero family. So I appreciate that they've got that, and the glimpse of Galactus is a nice tease.
Yeah, that and Galactus, really Galactus, not Galactus from the other Fantastic Four movie, which was, I can't remember, a collection like a of
nebula
bugs or
blob
something?
Or something.
Yeah,
an amorphous being. This one is like, no, from the shadows type stuff we see, or behind the scene, behind the person thing. It looks like a more gritty, realistic take on the dude with the wonky helmet.
Yeah. Yeah, it looks pretty good for me. There was one scene where, who's the girl who plays Sue Storm?
Vanessa Kirby.
Yeah, Vanessa Kirby. There's one scene where she was walking where it seemed like a weird CGI kind of, you know, AI generated walk. I just found it odd, but otherwise it looks pretty good. And this is one of the comic books I used to read when I was a kid. I didn't really get into the sort of nuts and bolts of it, but I was drawn towards the Fantastic Four back in the day, right? So although I never did question the Thing and how the Thing got to be the Thing and why that makes sense, it did look a little CGI-ish, you know. I know it's an actor in a motion capture suit, but it did look a little sort of unrealistic. I like the thing that the last thing was played by the dude from the who's the actor who played the thing in the last bunch of movies.
Oh, it was the guy from The Wire, right? Not The Wire, from The, Wire? The
TV show. Yeah,
TV show.
Yeah. It was a cop show. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah. Here, I'll have it right here. It is Michael Chiklis.
Chiklis, yeah. His thing was a little. I mean, I'm basing this on like what a 2-minute look at or 2-second look at in a trailer, right? So
Yeah, it's funny because in the trailer, he's wearing a uniform that goes right up to his neck. And I saw a couple of people calling out, well, isn't that convenient? You don't have to show his whole body. And this better not be how we see him through the whole movie. We want to see him, you know, his whole Rocky form. I suspect that's just for the trailer. You don't want to get like they really didn't get into a lot of action-y stuff. This was really kind of setting the stage of like, you know, it's a family and they're, you know, they're sort of revered celebrities. And it didn't really get too much into the pew-pews. And I have no doubt there'll be lots of pew-pews to come. All right, next trailer, Jurassic World Rebirth. As I said in our Slack channel, who asked for this? Jaime, your response was?
Shareholders.
Shareholders wanted this.
Universal Pictures shareholders.
Clamoring. Yeah. Which I thought was an excellent response. It should just be called Give Us Your Money, Damn It. Like, it just is so... It's so lacking in substance. It's like, what if there were even weirder dinosaurs and they were even on scarier island?
Another island that nobody knows about. Yeah.
And what if this time Scarlett Johansson was the badass? Like, okay. Yeah. Maybe on a Saturday while I'm doing laundry a la Paw Patrol? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. These are, and it's interesting that they just, this trailer sort of struck me as a horror version of Jurassic World. Not so much. Because, I mean, I'm thinking, like, this trailer doesn't say to me, take my, you know, six-year-old kid to see the dinosaur movie, you know?
Unless your kid's very emotionally stable.
You know what I mean? But like, the tone of it was almost like, you know those remakes that people do of trailers where they take, like, Winnie the Pooh or The Simpsons or whatever and turn it into a horror trailer, you know? It felt like that halfway through. I'm like, this doesn't feel like a nice happy-go-lucky, you know, and not that Jurassic Park is happy-go-lucky, but, you know, I never felt threatened by Jurassic World, like, or Jurassic anything, you know. I mean, they're cool, they're giant, they're big. I mean, the people trying to get away from, you know, I guess the first movie was pretty cool with the raptor chasing the girl in the kitchen, but... You know, yeah, and they kind of just, I guess they just
Downhill after the first one. I mean, I get what they were trying to do, but really for me, yeah, it really dropped off after that.
Yeah. Well, I think it was one book that he wrote, right? It wasn't like he wrote 10 books, right?
I think he wrote two. I think he wrote The Lost World as well.
Okay. Yeah.
Like,
yeah, and that was supposed to be the origin story of the animals at the park, right? Sort of, this is where they did the test bed in The Lost World, right?
Yep.
Yeah. I don't know. You remember those shows back in the day when you know, like on Saturday morning, where someone would fall through a hole in the earth and they would end up underneath the earth and
Land of the, like, Lost.
Yeah, and they would end up there was a couple of different versions. Was that the animated cartoon Land of the Lost?
No, Land of the Lost was the one that was like the Ray Harryhausen stuff.
Yeah, I know there was an animated one, like I want to say early 70s. But it just sort of seemed to be a thing that, you know, if you ever, like, so don't ever go and fall, don't go spelunking, in other words, because you'll end up in a prehistoric world and won't be good for you.
Yeah. And also, the moral of this one is, if somebody offers you a lot of money to go to an island filled with terrifying dinosaurs, no matter how good the reason is or how good the money is, say no. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, unless Scarlett Johansson's going with you with a, you know, kick-ass gun and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I appreciate what they're doing there. At least they're trying to flip the script and not have it just be like heroic man protects, you know, female scientists. It's heroic woman protects nerdy man from science, from monsters. I don't know.
The one thing about Jurassic Park in the stories, you know, notwithstanding Jurassic World, but you know, it's always like there's an intelligent woman on the screen, right? Like, that's the one thing I'll say about it, right? Like, even the kid that, hey, I know Unix, and it's clearly not Unix for those of us who know what Unix is.
Yeah.
Yeah, the one thing that I really don't like that they've focused on in a lot of the Jurassic Park movies is, look, in the first film, it made sense that there were kids there because, you know, that was Grandpa's theme park, right? And he was like, oh, it's going to be totally safe. And, like, he was a little off his rocker. So it kind of makes sense that they brought children around when they should not have brought children around, but it made sense there, right? It's really stretched in the Lost World film where it's like, oh, you know, Ian Malcolm's daughter stowed away. I'm like, oh, okay. And then the third film was like, all right, you know, I'll give it a pass for, like, I think there was like a shipwreck or a plane crash or something, and they landed on the island and these rich people are going to go get their kid. All right, cool. I'm like, that's it right there. Unless they tell me that they're going to pull a Game of Thrones on the kid that we see in the trailer, I'm like, there's no stakes. There's no stakes. Like, oh, is a dinosaur going to eat this child? Like, probably not. But if you do, I'm like, okay, now you've got my attention. Now everything has stakes. Maybe Scarlett Johansson with that. Shit, they just had a T-Rex eat this one kid like a chicken McNugget. Like, yeah, okay, I'm invested again.
That's an excellent point, Jaime. I think, you know, we talk about the lack of stakes in so many of these shows, especially when they do prequels. This one's at least a sequel, but the prequel problem we talk about all the time is that, you know they can't kill the major characters that you know live on, so what are the stakes? In this case, like, wouldn't it be great if they pulled, like, the Joss Whedon from Serenity kind of move where, like, they just kill, like, a major character, somebody, like, you know... Like, Ian Malcolm is murdered by a velociraptor in the first scene. You're like, wait, what?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Come on, Jurassic franchise. Surprise us. Do something
chaos
else.
Theory. Chaos theory.
I know the common thing is like, well, you know, the kids want to have somebody that they can imagine themselves up. I'm like, well, hold on. Like, you haven't watched kids play. They frequently love pretending to be adult characters. And two, this is a movie with dinosaurs in it. Like, if you want them to buy stuff, trust me, they're definitely going to buy stuff based on this movie. Like, you're golden. You don't need to, you know, you should just stop selling once you've made the sale.
Hey, kids, do you like dinosaurs? Yes. Okay, good. We're done. All right. Interesting next one. So big movie coming out this summer is Superman, the first sort of major push of the James Gunn-led DC Comics cinematic universe. However, it may not be coming out everywhere if the family of one of the creators has something to say about it. So the estate of Superman co-creator and Canadian Joe Shuster is suing Warner Brothers and DC Comics, saying that they do not have the rights anymore to Superman in a lot of places. So the suit says that they are infringing copyright in Canada, the United Kingdom, Ireland, and Australia, which are several key markets for movie releases. And they say that the problem is that the rights to Superman in those jurisdictions should have reverted back to Joe Shuster and his co-creator Jerry Siegel years ago, and that DC and Warner Brothers are holding on to those rights illegally. So by law, theoretically, they're right. So foreign copyrights revert back to the estate of the creator and not the holder 25 years after the death of the creator. Joe died in 1992, Jerry died in 1996, and so they are correct that under that interpretation of the law, that there is no rights held by DC Warner Brothers in those markets. In the United States, they continue to hold the rule because the laws are a little bit different. But any way you slice it, this could be a real mess because they are going to have to find a way to make nicey nice with the family. The families, these, you know, creators who worked on these classic characters in the 1930s, you know, famously Superman was sold for, I think it was a couple hundred dollars. $130, sorry, $65 each was what they sold the rights to Superman to DC for back in the 1930s, because the company didn't want to publish a character that didn't own the rights to. So they got $65. Now, that's not nothing in 1938, especially, you know, at the tail end of the Great Depression. However, it's certainly not what they've made off of that character over the course of time. And they never really treated Jerry and Joe with much dignity and respect as far as their contribution to creating and establishing this amazing institution that is Superman. So all that to say, I think this is going to be a very interesting one to see what happens, because it could even just set the precedent of them getting a settlement or something else, which would be great because there are a lot of other comic creators' families who would certainly appreciate it if they would start recognizing the contributions of those creators and also breaking off some money that these massive corporations are making off of their family's legacy. So Next up, this one has got me a little bit excited. So
a little.
I'm not getting my hopes up yet. So the story is that Sarah Michelle Gellar is apparently set to revive her role as Buffy Summers in a reboot of Buffy the Vampire Slayer with Chloe Zhao directing. So I'm going to say that I'm trying not to get too excited. I am a long, long time Buffy fan. I really like the Buffyverse. Like a lot of fans, I was pretty heartbroken and very disgusted when all the allegations against Joss Whedon came out about his treatment of people that he works with, and particularly women. And it, to me, it felt like that was, you know, the nail in the coffin for, well, I guess we'll just have to reflect on the good old days because it doesn't seem like there's going to be more. However, as much as Joss is responsible for the stories of Buffy and a lot of the stuff that happened back in the early 2000s, he is not the license holder. And so other people can take a swing at it. And so Sarah said on her social media that she wasn't really interested in doing it, but she decided to take a meeting with Chloe Zhao to talk to her about it and see if there was a fit. And apparently they have explored it, and now they are very close to a deal to sign to do a project at Hulu. So, yay!
Yeah.
Jaime, I don't know if we talked about this. Are you a Buffy Angel fan?
I watched, but I didn't watch in any serious fashion. I wasn't there week after week. It was more like, oh, look, it's on. I'll watch sort of thing. So I was kind of on the outside edge of this fandom. Yeah. I feel like it was very similar to my fandom of The X-Files. Again, It was a very popular show. I would watch here and there, but didn't watch in any serious way. So some of the story arcs kind of go over my head a bit, but I feel like they did a pretty good job of seemingly continuing story arcs, but having some, monster of the week or like, oh, okay, I get the gist of what's happening here. You know, this guy hates this other guy kind of thing, where it was serialized, but it didn't seem like it was like, oh man, did you miss episode 7? Well, 8's not going to make any sense. You know, it's not that, that intense because it was still broadcast television. So I appreciated that. And, you know, I certainly did enjoy the style that it had. I mean, you know, we're talking and dancing around a lot of the bad stuff that has come out, but there's a big reason that people were looking forward to the Avengers, mm-hmm. right? And having that come together. I'm like, hey, let's see what happens here. We enjoyed this material. What can this person do?
Yeah.
You know, what more innocent days we had back then?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, for those who don't know all the dots, Joss Whedon, who was the sort of brainchild of the Buffy as we know it TV show and the spinoff Angel, also went on to do Firefly and the Serenity movie, and was
Dollhouse. Yeah,
Dollhouse, and was beloved enough that he ended up becoming the director for the first major Marvel movie team up, which was the Avengers and then Avengers 2, so or Avengers Age of Ultron. You know, he was a big, huge deal for a while there, and then his fall from grace was pretty precipitous. And like I say, I think a lot of us were worried that he was going to take Buffy with him when he went down. So, good news. Put this in the hands of women. Good call.
Yeah. Well, was the movie Buffy, was it the first Buffy, the one with
Christy Swanson?
That weird person. Yeah.
Was Christy it Christy Swanson?
Oh, I was thinking you did it. So where does that one fit into the sort of pantheon? Was it Buffy a character before Joss Whedon made the show?
So or? The movie version exists outside of the show, different actors and everything else, but it is kind of referenced in the early parts. They mentioned that, you know, Buffy, you know, burned down a gym at her old school, and that's a tie back to the movie and stuff. So they kind of acknowledge it without actually going back into it. They don't really circle back on it very much. They kind of just sort of say, yes, that stuff happened. It was a different actor. Let's move on. But my favorite part of this story is that one of the executive producers of this project is Dolly Parton, because Dolly apparently financed the original movie. And so she continues to be part of the brain trust around Buffy and owns some of the rights, which is awesome. All right. Well, speaking of cancellations due to bad behavior, Netflix is canceling The Sandman in the wake of the Neil Gaiman allegations. So we've talked about that the last few episodes of this podcast, that there are these very, very upsetting allegations of sexual harassment and other issues against the creator of Sandman and once beloved New York Times bestselling author Neil Gaiman. And Netflix had been doing an adaptation, a long anticipated, long stewing, much heralded adaptation of the Sandman comic book that debuted in the late 1980s. And they did the first season, which ostensibly covers the first like 15-ish issues of the series. And that, well, 50, probably almost 20 issues of the first series. And they definitely seemed like they were going to adapt the whole thing. They had already finished season two, which looked like it was going to basically be the second major arc, the next, you know, 8-10 issues of the book. But they've announced that this is it. They're going to tell this one last story and then conclude this story. So we are not going to get a television adaptation of The Sandman in any proper way. It is basically crumbling around us. And I'm sure the second season will be good. There are a lot of very talented people working on it. The first season was quite good, I thought. It's extremely disappointing that once again, fans are paying the price for the bad behavior of creators. And it's really sad. It's sad for all the people that worked so hard to make this show come to life. It's sad for the fans who have, obviously now very conflicted feelings about this product and project. But it's just yet another one of those opportunities for us to use the mantra of Spotcast, which is, once again, gentlemen, keep it in your pants.
Keep it in your pants.
Yeah, the headlines here always confuse me. I'm not a fan of people saying this thing is canceled. And I assume that means, oh, there is no more content coming out. But actually, it's like, no, it's canceled as soon as this second season of content comes out. That's a very confusing sort of thing.
Yeah, it's not like, well, because again, they've already spent all the money and, you know, to an extent, they're trying to mitigate for the people who don't necessarily have issues with, you know, watching a show irrespective of, you know, creators or whatever. They are going to put it out there and let people do it. And in typical Netflix fashion, it'll just be the whole thing. And, you know, here's everything, we're done. But yeah, it's just bad. It's just a bad thing that, you know, like, I don't even know how to feel about this. Like, the second arc of Sandman is one of my favorite stories I've ever read. It's so beautifully told. You know, there's no disputing that Neil is an extremely talented and creative writer. He's just also other things that are really, 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 really unpleasant. I was looking forward to this immensely. It was one of the things that I was most excited about this year as far as television programs. And now I don't even know if I'll watch it because I just feel very icky about the whole thing.
All right, homie, rip.
Yeah, this is going to be really hard or difficult to parse. So Cobra Kai season 6 was split into 3 parts. So I believe there's like 15 episodes, if I'm not mistaken, in total planned. So the first 10 episodes are already out. You can watch them to your heart's content. If you're like me, who was on an airplane and said, "What? How did this end right here in episode 10? Like, this is insane." It's like, oh, because there's a third part coming out on February 13th. So the final part of season 6 is coming out. And that should get us up to speed completely with what's presumably going to go on during the Karate Kid Legends movie coming out later in the summer.
So what did you think of the trailer? And do you think that this is going to be, again, leaving you on a bit of a cliffhanger? Because it is, as you say, setting up a movie.
I think it will wrap up the doing karate stuff and then move over into Kung Fu land, is the joke that people had on the interwebs. Because if folks are not up to speed, at some point, Daniel LaRusso, the Karate Kid from the movies, you know, now an adult, married adult with kids and stuff, he promised his wife that this one last tournament would happen here in season 6. And then, you know, they'll quit with karate because karate has been kind of ruining their lives for the past 6 seasons. And people joked on the internet, like, wait a minute, what's he doing with Jackie Chan, Mr. Han? It's like, that's Kung Fu. That's a loophole right there. He didn't say nothing about Kung Fu, Jiu-Jitsu, Krav Maga, pick him. Aikido, Kendo, just keep picking up, like Capoeira, he can continue on this forever if they wanted to. And he'd technically still not be lying to his wife.
That's a great dude loophole he's found there.
But yeah, I mean, the trailer, at this point, six seasons in, and if you liked Cobra Kai, I think you should finish it up. If you didn't, I'm not going to try to convince you to watch. It's more of an awareness thing. But if you're interested in the movie, presumably there will be some sort of carryover. I anticipate the movie not needing you to, strictly speaking, have watched this show, because that's a lot to ask. And for the mainstream sort of viewer, they're going to like remember, oh yeah, Karate Kid. They may have seen the other Karate Kid with Jackie Chan and stuff. And so they'll need to more or less get what's going on when they bring them together. But I think you might enjoy Easter eggs or callbacks or something that are, extra flavor and nuance, not necessarily like, oh, I'm totally confused sort of thing, if you didn't watch this show.
Cool. All right. Well, that brings us to the part of the show where we talk about something Star Trek related, hopefully. And this time we have a couple of episodes of Star Trek Prodigy, which we're doing our watch, and Jaime's doing a rewatch of, and then we'll move on to some exciting elevator music show later. But yeah, so this time we're talking about episodes 7 and 8, The Fast and the Curious, and the second episode 8 is There Is Beauty No Truth. Is there in beauty no truth? Okay, but let's talk about The Fast and the Curious, which, gee, I wonder where they get that name from.
Yeah, so this one was the Infinity, which the crew, formerly the crew of the Protostar, have now stolen the Infinity and are
borrowed,
and are going to try and go and find Captain Chakotay. However, they decide to take a shortcut. What could go wrong? And go through a Borg conduit, and of course this sucks them to a planet where they are basically grabbed up by this supposed Kazon clan that are testing the might of their pilots against, people who come in. And so they have these like death races. So yeah, so it's Fast and the Furious. So it's basically it's a car race. It's every stereotype of space race.
It's a pod race.
It
pod
pretty races, much is. Yeah. It's basically all those, we always joke about Starter Trek. This is what it's like to do a pod race. This is, and where it really gets Starter Trekky is that there's a twist. Of course, there's a twist. And the twist is that there's actually the Kazon aren't in charge. It's actually an evil robot computer.
Yes, an evil computer.
Because that's what they do, those evil computers.
Landru, yes.
That's right, yes. So, yeah. I mean, it was fun. I didn't like it as much as last week's duo, this one, just because it was a little bit rote. Like, it kind of just felt like you knew every beat you were going to hit along the way, and we did.
Yeah.
But
It's a filler. This is a filler episode.
Well, it was such a sidetrack, right? Character. Like, it really was, hey, we're on our way to go save Captain Chakotay, and we suddenly got pulled over here for this other adventure for a whole episode. Like, it just, wasn't really on target, but it was also, I think if you like this kind of, action racy kind of story, then it might have been better for you. I don't know. Jaime, what'd you think?
Yeah, I think, as folks need to recall, the sort of duality of a lot of these episodes are going to be, there's an overarching post-Voyager, where are they now? What's going on with like Janeway and Chakotay and other folks, for the adults who presumably grew up with Voyager and now have children of their own. And the other half of that duality is, babies first Star Trek sort of thing, right? This is something that families can watch together. So this was 100%. I wrote the same thing that you guys already talked about of like, this is the trope of, that kids need to be introduced to the, first evil computer control society trope. And guess what? There's another one, coming up in the next episode that we'll talk about that trope, because it's very easy to identify as well. So I don't, it's on a grading scale, right? Like if this was new Trek that was, you know, largely aimed at adults, you know, certainly a lot of it is family friendly, but if it was largely aimed at adults, like Discovery or Strange New Worlds or Picard or something, I'd be grading it a lot harder on that. The pod racing thing was like, you know, kind of the filler element of this, of trying to move things along on the story. But I can see why kids need to see this, because you got to teach them young, you know. The evil computer control society trope is a thing they will encounter.
And especially when they get around to Lower Decks when they mock it mercilessly.
Yeah. I guess it's sort of the, like, from a kid's perspective, it's kind of like the world is bigger than just your mom and your dad kind of thing. I guess maybe that's the world lesson there, that, you know, there are forces beyond your teacher, your mom, your dad kind of thing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Your hockey coach, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Interesting. And it's, you know, playing, like, as you said, to that, the fans that like the Fast and Furious franchise, yeah. Right? So.
And I guess the consequence of this episode is that Zero sacrifices their robotic exoskeleton in order to save the day, and then is basically like a bodiless head for a little while, mm-hmm. which I guess sets up the next episode.
Well, with the broken visor as well. Like, so, and you know, they try, you know, Jankum tries to give them a some sort of like maneuverability, but they end up just strapping them into the seat, yeah. There, right? And then we move on to the next one, which is the trope of there's always some amazing new capability, you know, given to one of the characters.
But it's at a price.
But there's always a price, and the price is always way beyond what you're prepared to pay or willing to pay, right?
So. Yeah. Like, at a certain mm-hmm. point, it really does, like, I mean, again, we have been joking about it for a couple of years now, but, like, they really are spoon-feeding Star Trek to young people. Like, this episode was, like, so many Star Trek tropes.
Yeah, well, the thing about it is like, the what is she? She's a Medusa, right? Yeah. Or they're a Medusa. Yeah, the reason why the original series had a lot of ephemeral villains is because they didn't have the budget to have like guys running around in rubber suits, yeah. Right? So they would have like a video effect would be like the big, you know, nemesis. Or I mean, like, unfortunately we're seeing all the remastered, you know, special effects the original series is, but back then it was like, you know, they would flip the film negative positive to show that there's some sort of matter antimatter conflict going on. Or like, I'm thinking of there's one character that is fighting himself in the reverse world, which is the first sort of time we ever saw a multiverse kind mm-hmm. of idea, right? But and it was like they're negative where we're positive kind of thing. But in this one, the Medusan doesn't have, they're non-corporeal. They're just, they have no body. They have no arms, no legs, whatever. And you know, and you see a scene there where they're wearing the visors because you can't look upon a Medusa and not go blind or mad.
Yeah, because that's what they did at the end of the first season, right?
Yeah, and then so that's why Zero's in a suit, and that's why Zero's suit has arms and legs, obviously, to be bipedal and convenient for the rest of the people in the show, and, you know, traveling around in starships and stuff, which surprisingly have gravity no matter where they are. But the story here is that they land on a planet or a world where there are other Medusans and other non-corporeal entities who are given a corporeal body, like an artificial, like a golem, yep. almost, I guess, right? And the idea is that once they have the ability to have senses, you know, they'll never want to give that up. And it's kind of funny because that's the sort of the original series had a lot of the American way kind of was the thing. Once you discover the American way, you'll never want to change anything else, right? Notwithstanding current standards of the American way, but which isn't true in a lot of cases, and they've discovered that in the story that Zero values her friendship with her crewmates more than having a corporeal body or even having senses, right? So, like, we think senses are great because that's how we communicate with the world. We, you know, take things in, we listen, we hear, we taste, we smell, we see, right? But, you know, that's also our prison, right? Because maybe there are other ways to experience life. That's my soapbox.
Yeah, and this is a title that is difficult. It's easy to stumble on. So this title is There in Beauty No Truth? Which is probably a brilliant, you know, recombination of Is There in Truth No Beauty from TOS, which also had a Medusan.
Oh, did it? Oh.
Yeah, it's like...
That's the
Spock,
one with...
Spock goes nuts because he accidentally looks at the Medusan.
Yeah. Miranda, that woman Miranda, that actress that was in, like, all the original series.
Yeah, so it's, you know, so kudos to him there. You know, I think you all hit on a slightly different take on the trope. I wrote the trope down as utopian society has a terrible secret downside that kids need to learn. Kind of like the utopian, like, you know, like practically a sex planet kind of thing that Wesley, like, accidentally steps on the grass or something. They're, oh, you got to die. It's the only way we can have such beauty and peace is we just have to be exceptionally dark when it comes to crime and punishment.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The big question I had on this one that may be non-obvious to folks. So the other side of this, and actually we didn't mention maybe the most important thing that actually occurred in the filler episode right before, and that was the fact that these tentacles came out of nowhere and tried to attack what was believed to be Gwyn, but was actually the Gwyn hologram, right? So Janeway and crew eventually figure out here that the kids were hologram fakes, and they end up talking to the reactivating the Gwyn one to see, like, what happened here? Our sensors have a blank. So the doctor, right, the emergency medical hologram, is faking Holo Kids, like, wearing blackface. Is that an offensive thing to him? That's what I was wondering through the whole thing.
Can you say that again?
So the kids used holograms to fake being alive, and even the doctor was convinced that they were alive. And so, you know, is it offensive to him in some way? Is that like hollow face, like the equivalent of blackface? Is it offensive, hollow face, racially to the doctor?
It's cultural appropriation, misappropriation, yeah.
I love the term hollow face. That's excellent. Yeah, I mean... He is an advocate for, you know, holographic rights, so...
Yeah, exactly.
But then I also think it's kind of weird that, like, you know, the hollow version of Gwyn is freaking out, and they're like, well, what's our solution? Ah, turn her off.
Yeah. Not back her up, restore her, and, you know, just get rid of her, yeah. I don't know. Because that's the thing, is that's an interesting point, because they didn't cover those two things. One is that... You know, there are a lot of holographic doctors and mechanics and whatever in the new Star Trek universe because of Picard, right? The Picard episode had several iterations of holographic people. And there's the whole line in The Next Generation with Moriarty, right? And how Picard decides that he is sentient, right? And deserves to be... You know, backed up to tape somewhere or whatever, or given a holographic simulation that doesn't shut down, right?
Yeah,
but they I guess that's too advanced a concept for the little.
I was going to say, minds, I think you just broke, right? A bunch of children's minds, Tim. Good job.
I probably broke a few adults too while I was at it. Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
It's interesting. So yeah, and so the big question for me coming from this episode is, okay, so what's going to happen to Zero's body now? Like, they're saying there's no warranty now. You're going to drive it off the lot, and, you know, if you get in an accident, there's going to be no shop to go get it fixed. And or does Zero go back into, for continuity, does Zero go back into the some sort of exosuit, right?
Yeah, so. I mean, I think in the same way we saw Murph kind of evolve from its original form, their original form, I guess maybe that's the same thing, is we are kind of like evolving the form, maybe? There's like something, I mean due respect to, you know, I mean, it's weird because... Zero is actually the most powerful of the group, but probably even more powerful than Rock Talk, because they can make somebody go insane by looking at them, but has this kind of weird little like Mike Wazowski body that is just not really the most impressive thing ever. Like, it seems like they're due for an upgrade.
Well, I mean, it's funny though that, like, to that point, you know, Zero does seem very mature as a character, right? As an individual, I suppose. Yet the rest of them are pretty much, you know, post-adolescent children, right? Like, I would put who's the main character? Doll. I would put him about 17 in terms of like maturity, right? In terms of like human scale,
that
right?
About right.
Mm-hmm. You know, and Gwyn probably the same, you know. But I would put Zero as a, you know, much more older person, right? And same with Jankum to a certain extent, yeah. Right? And then Rock Talk is, she's the youngest, right? Or she's probably like the child prodigy.
Yeah, yeah.
Whom am I missing? Is it just the five?
Gwyn, Murph, Dal.
Oh, Murph. Murph, yeah. I missed Murph.
Murph. I mean, apparently Murph speaks
Murph way is old, like but... Murph is like Odo. He sleeps in a bucket. We don't know much about him. Yeah. Yep. Try and explain that bucket concept to the kids.
Yeah.
Too.
He's cake.
All right. Any other big questions comes out of Prodigy? How are we feeling about the where we are in the series? We're coming up on the midpoint.
We are 12 episodes and or 6 episodes this podcast to go. You know, it's right pretty much where I kind of expected it to be, in that it's my least favorite Star Trek thing I've ever seen, other than Section 31.
It's always got Section 31 to prop it up.
Sorry, and Star Trek 5. Kiss my butt, Star Trek 5.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, what does God want with a starship?
What do we want with somebody who writes a story about God wanting a starship?
Now, a word from our sponsor.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, Geico helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with Geico.
Now, back to the show.
Yeah, so what does an office need goats for?
Well, that is a good question.
And Highland people, you know, savage Highland people running around. I mean, not that most offices don't have, you know, their share of let's call them shepherds, you know, or these nut bars that you would keep in. Like, I guess it's the people who work on the back end systems and stuff that we just, you know, we don't let them out. We don't let them near the customers. Well, no, not the IT department. I've worked in entire technical companies where I'm making back me up. There are like locked rooms where you never let people. You don't even acknowledge that they exist, and that's where those people go. You know, they have badges, and they can come in, badge out, and they get invited to the office cake ceremonies when somebody leaves. But you know, there's always this you know, unkempt. Thing. We're talking about Severance, by the way, just, you know, who is alive, which is not what this episode is about. But there's a scene where they always go exploring these other departments. And it's one of the things about this show that's kind of interesting, is they always go to like this. I don't know what they were doing, but they were trying to find. Oh, they were trying to find out where the goats were coming from, right?
Well, the bigger story is they're trying to find Mark's wife and or Miss Casey, depending
well,
on
well, you know. Yeah, she's the proto star in this that's show, right. But it interesting show. I'll let you guys say stuff.
Yeah, so this after the first two episodes that kind of wrapped up the story of the first season as far as the consequences. This is the first one that kind of starts the bigger overall, like everybody's back at work, the mystery is deepening, and it's weird as heck. Like, it really is weird. They go looking for Miss Casey. They decide to head to the direction of where they saw the man in the goat room in season one. And in that one, it was weird, but it was just like a few baby goats and the guy saying they're not ready yet, which was weird. This is weirder. They go and there's like a full-size goat pasture inside of the floor, the severed floor, and the mammalian's nurturable department. That's weird. Gwendolyn Christie is a guest star in this one. Always happy to see Gwendolyn and anything that she wants to pop up in. Of course, famously, Game of Thrones. But that whole part with Mark and Helly and the weird one, the weird goat people, was very strange. And there's a lot of weird theories online about, like, well, what do the goats mean? Like, what's the whole point of having a goat pasture inside the floor? I mean,
I do have a question. Yeah. I have a question. What do the goats mean?
What? It wasn't obvious when they asked them if they could lift their shirts and show their bellies.
Verify if they do or do not have pouches.
Do or do not have pouches was I believe, yeah, what they were looking for.
But do goats have pouches?
No, but I think the idea is that this ties into the same stuff from the first season, where it sounds like what they do as an organization, what Lumen does as an organization, is keeps all these departments separated by basically making them all sound like monsters to one another. So we see in the first season the Christopher Walken's character comes over and they're like, oh, you're a monster. And, you know, we really see like this sort of animosity that they've fostered in them. I think it's the same thing when they show up there, all of the goat people in the mammalian's nurturable department are like, oh, they're here, they're monsters. They've got, you know, different body parts than us. They're complete, you know, monsters. And of course, this is all just designed to keep them from interacting so they can actually put together the big puzzle of what the heck's going on that floor.
So what's strange about that, though, is like, can you imagine all of these sheep herders, let's call them goat herders, go into an elevator and come out on the top floor in disheveled clothes? Like, would they not question what happened to my innie?
I mean, they were hired as goat experts. Who knows, right? I suspect we'll see more of that. I would hope that they wasn't just a stunt cast of a one-time appearance by Gwendolyn Christie. I hope that
this may be the new version of the Love Boat, where once a week, you know, next week it'll be Conan O'Brien, and, you know.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully not. Hopefully this is, you know, something that is tied to the greater overall mystery. I mean, we do get a little progress in that, you know, at first they seem very hostile, and then it turns out that they actually do know Miss Casey, or who's, you know, actually in reality is Mark's wife on the outside world, who he thought was dead. And so, yeah, they basically say, like, they're not going to get in the way. They liked her, and they hope that, you know, they can find anything. That's the part that's kind of weird, because it's a weird sort of side quest, but they do get a little bit of progress, but ultimately it doesn't really mean much other than deepening the mystery of, like, why goats? So I guess my question to the two of you is, well, it's Tim's question. Why are there goats on the severed floor of Lumen? The only thing that I came to was maybe this is a cloning kind of situation, and goats are easy to clone. They're trying to work on, because I was trying to think of, like, well, how could Miss Casey or, you know, Mark's wife be alive and dead? He said, I saw her body. He said that in a recent episode, I saw her body. And so the only thing that popped into my head was, well, maybe it was a clone version, and maybe the experiment is, well, we clone sheep, and the clone sheep evolved into we can clone people.
Yeah, that could be a possible thing, because they certainly seem to be doing or leading towards some sort of overall mind control aspect that seems to be hinted at a lot with the way that the severed technology works. And Helena's father, when he doesn't realize that he's talking to Helly, the innie Helly, he mentions something about, like, oh, eventually you'll be taking over the company, kind of statement. But he says it as, like, eventually you'll be there at my revolving.
Yeah.
Which is a weird... I saw that in one of the recap things that I watched before the season started. As we were revolving, I was like, that's a weird term. You wouldn't say that as, like, a normal thing. It sounds potentially religious, but also potentially like that's another tech thing that they're working on. So cloned bodies to continue living on in could be a possibility.
Yeah. So my thought was, are they trying to bring back the founder, Kier, or is Kier in every subsequent generation? Like, is the guy who's actually, like, I think his name is Jame. Is Jame Egan actually like the once again reincarnated version of the founder? And is the idea of a revolving that basically, like, you know, you are the host for this thing? I mean, it's weird. Like, when you add up all these weird little sort of side things, you know, there was that weird waffle party in last season where there was like the pagan imagery with like the goats. There was kind of vaguely satanic kind of imagery to that too. And I was like, you know, again, is this, you know, it seems very culty. Is there a cult element to this? Is it about possession? Is it about, you know, like they kind of are throwing a lot of things against the wall for us to chew on, you know?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
But I guess that's the fun of the show. I mean, here we are talking about it and we're just like, I don't know, could be anything. Let's keep watching.
The other sort of question I have that they're leading us down a path when it turns out that Irving, what he has seen is the exports room.
Yeah.
And it was something that OND used to use for exports, presumably, but it was closed off for them. So there was a natural question of like, why did it get closed off? Did something happen? You know?
Yep. And then this episode ends with like a pretty major moment so far. One of the biggest moments of the series so far, which is Mark decides that he's going to undergo the same procedure to join his innie and his outie personalities back together, reintegration, so that he can then have all of himself on both the inside and the outside. And yeah, I mean, that's a pretty big deal, because essentially the two separate characters that Adam Scott's been playing for the first, you know, 12 episodes of this show, 11, 12 episodes of this show, are now going to be all in one very complicated character, right?
Yeah, yeah. And the if there's such a thing as a pew-pew-pew here, the reintegration of Mark and Mark S. was pretty yeah. interesting to see visually how they showed it.
I agree. Yeah, I must say, you know, the fourth episode I had read online. So I guess they gave the first four episodes to television critics, and every one of them said like four is the banger. Four is the one where you're going to like, you know, be the most interested. And if it's about that reintegration process, about Mark and Mark, and like really Mark Scout and Mark S becoming one person, that could be a really fascinating episode, especially the way these creators and actors do this show. It could be really neat to see how they try and create this amalgamated person, you know, bringing them back together, all these complex feelings, all like, you know, they really have, you know, done a wonderful job of creating distinctive personalities for the same person. The way that Mark S. walks and stands is very different from the way that Mark Scout does. I think it'll be really interesting to see how they bring that all together.
There you go. So you said next episode then, right? Episode four. That's the one to get hyped for.
Hey guys, what are you doing after this podcast?
There you go. I know that the episode just dropped. It Apple does this weird thing.
It is available Friday or Thursday sometime in the evening.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense, because I was like, even if I did the math, it's like, okay, if it was 3 p.m. Eastern, that would be, you know, midnight Pacific, and it dropped at like, I don't know, 5 o'clock here, 5 Eastern, Pacific.
Yeah, so, that's pretty strange. Early. Cool. Hey, guys, want to talk about the Spockies?
Yeah, you got a list here.
I did finally sit down and work out the long list. We're going to call this the long list. But I remember we did this last year where we started with the long list and we just started throwing things off the side of the boat until we got down to a handful so that we could get it to a manageable amount. So I'm just going to get whipped through the list and then we can circle back to like the immediate tossers, because there are definitely some in here I think can go immediately. I just put them in here for our discussion. Alien Romulus, Beetlejuice, Borderlands, Deadpool and Wolverine, Dune Part 2, Furiosa, A Mad Max Saga, Ghostbusters Frozen Empire, Godzilla, X Kong, The New Empire, Joker, Folie à Deux, Kraven the Hunter, the Lord of the Rings, War of the Rohirrim, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, Madame Web, yeah, Sonic the Hedgehog 3, The Substance, Transformers 1, Venom the Last Dance, Wicked, and The Wild Robot. That is...
I want to propose a second category called Worst Sci-Fi Movie.
Just the ones that get booted out of this category.
It's the same list, right?
Well, yeah. So there's a few here I think we can do away with pretty quickly. I'm going to go ahead and say, I haven't seen it, but I think we can go ahead and take Borderlands off the list.
Yeah. Madam Web as well.
Madam Web could come off the list. Joker Part 2 could probably come off the list. Kraven the Hunter could probably come off the list.
Yeah,
shall I strike these through or shall I just remove them from the list?
Remove them.
Okay. So, here we go. The merciless culling
makes,
has...
It makes my copying and pasting easier.
Yeah, the merciless culling has begun. Okay. Yeah. So...
Sonic the Hedgehog can go too, I think.
Well, I left that in there because I know, Jaime, you've enjoyed the Sonic movie, so I thought I'd give that one to you to make the decision.
I think there's, arguments to be made for Sonic the Hedgehog 3, but I don't think it would make its way into a best list. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. It's going to win other awards somewhere else probably, but it's not a best picture.
All right. I'm going to say Venom could probably go also.
Yeah. Along similar lines.
All right. So let's start at the top.
Well, we could get rid of Wicked too, because it's not, I mean, we include Wicked, but is it really our thing?
I mean, I think it's, it's a fantasy musical. I haven't seen it yet, so I don't feel qualified. I didn't know if we should just leave that in there for public consumption, but.
Yeah, we'll leave it in.
All right. So that cuts our list down a little bit. We've got Alien Romulus. Mm-hmm. Did anybody feel strongly enough this to be a best movie of the year?
It was good, but I wouldn't say best.
Yeah. That would be my feeling.
Yes. Did you see it?
Beetlejuice, I thought was awful.
I haven't seen it.
Yeah, I don't think it... But also, let's keep in mind, let's keep looking at the list here. Also, keep in mind, if you recall, there was the year, I believe it was like 2020 year going into 2021, where I joked for the Academy Awards. I said, oh, based on their criteria, Sonic the Hedgehog, the first one, has to be the best picture winner because literally nothing else came out. And then they had to relax the rules like, okay. It doesn't have to be in theaters for too long because theaters were closed. Yeah. So along the same lines, before we get too heavy with the weed whacker here, I think I'm okay taking Beetlejuice out, but let's just make sure we end up with, more than one movie at the end of the category.
Well, no, I think we should limit. I think last year we did this too: is limit the best movie to 10. Like, let's be like the Academy here. There's 3 members in this Academy, so we all get.
All right, so that we are at 12 now, so we have to get rid of 2 more movies. I would suggest Ghostbusters: Frozen Empire was a pretty poor second effort. That would be one that I would have no issue dropping. Mm. Nor Beetlejuice.
Okay.
I only saw a bit of Godzilla Kong, but I'm going to say it was not an award-winning movie.
Yeah, I would take out Beetlejuice. No, I mean, I haven't seen The Wild Robot, but the people who have seen it said it's good, but I don't know if it's best yet.
I'm going to watch it tomorrow on an airplane because I saw that they're playing it and I'm like, I'm totally going to watch that.
All right, cool.
All right, well, I'm going to go ahead and call Ghostbusters.
What airline are you flying?
Air Canada.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
You have to pay for
No, because my flight's more than 2 hours, so yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, is that what the rule is? Okay.
Yeah. Long enough to watch a movie.
We have 10 now or what?
We have 11. We have one more cut to make. Could be...
Wait, how is your flight 2 hours?
That's what it takes. It takes 2 hours to fly east to west. Takes 2 hours and 6 minutes to fly from Fredericton to...
Oh, okay. And then there's an hour change. And
there's an hour time change, right. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so I'm leaving here at 12:15 and I'm arriving at like 1:20.
Yeah, you arrived yesterday. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Get it. Okay.
Yeah.
All right,
one more movie to cut. Beetlejuice.
Oh, one more movie?
Or Godzilla, or...
Wait. How many have we got? I see 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Oh, yeah, right. One more to go.
We have 11. Anyone feel strongly about any of these?
I would say get rid of Wicked. I'm going to go back to that one.
All right. As the most different from the others.
I have no opinion.
Yeah, I'm okay with wicked being removed. That's
okay.
All right, we'll get to some later categories also. So there we go. So there's our top 10 best TV show. These ones I've done by season because I think it's important, because a lot of them are season one, some of them are season twos. Again, long list. We'll need to call quite a number out of here, but I don't think that'll be.
Is super Echo the Saldana movie?
No, Echo. These are all TV shows, and Echo is the one that was the character that spun out of the Hawkeye series on Disney Plus. Oh,
okay, right. Yeah, the yeah,
yeah. So, Three Body Problem season one, The Acolyte season one, Agatha All Along season one, Arcane season two, Avatar: The Last Airbender season one. That's the live action one. Batman the Caped Crusader season one, Creature Commando season one, Dark Matter season one, Doctor Who season one, sort of, Dune Prophecy season one, Echo season one, Orphan Black Echo season one, The Penguin season one, Snowpiercer season four, Star Trek Discovery season five, Star Trek Lower Decks season five, Star Trek Prodigy season two, Star Wars The Bad Batch season three, Star Wars Skeleton Crew season one, Time Bandits season one, The Umbrella Academy season four, What If season three, What We Do in the Shadows season six, and X-Men 97 season one.
Tough category.
You may fire when ready.
I was going to say, well, What Do We Do in the Shadows? I've never seen that. So
I love that show, but I don't know if there's enough critical love behind, like, from our collective. I don't know. I'm going to go ahead and say Dune Prophecy can go bye-bye because I hated that. I thought it was awful.
Yeah, horrible. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Anything else we feel strongly for or against?
I don't know what Arcane is. What's Arcane?
Arcane is a Netflix series that's based on a video game, but it is very much loved. I know a lot of people who really like it.
Did you listen to this podcast?
One of them does.
All right.
Orphan Black Echoes, anyone? Echo?
Yeah, I think Orphan Black Echoes is not worthy of being on here.
No. Yeah, go.
I haven't watched Snowpiercer, but I know that, again, it's up to season four. People do enjoy it.
Yeah. What, it's a train?
Yeah, I think this is the fourth and final season, if I'm not mistaken, based on the...
Yep.
The TV commercial I've seen.
Yeah. Would so the Acolyte go then, if that's the case? Because
I mean, again, depends if you felt like there was any love for it whatsoever. I don't think it would be on my top 10 list, but
no, right, yeah, right. That's what I'm saying. If we're picking best shows, yep. then
all right, goodbye.
That goes.
Anyone feel strongly about Avatar?
Oh, Airbender? No, I haven't seen it, so I would no. No.
Yeah, I think we're okay.
People can write it in if they think it's that bad. If we're completely off base here, right?
I thought the new Batman was fine, but I don't feel strongly enough to put it as a top show of the year.
Right.
And I like Creature Commandos, but again, I don't think it was like award worthy.
Well, let me see. What would be my best show here?
Well, don't spoil it. Problem? Just keep it to yourself.
No, I'm just okay. That one's good.
Gotta admit,
Time Bandits. Time Bandits can probably go too. That was and it's canceled, right?
It is.
Yeah.
Okay. Bye bye.
I'm going to guess that
I feel okay dropping the Umbrella Academy. I didn't think the fourth season was very good.
That's true. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Again, same thing. What If? I thought it was fine, but I don't think it was worth an award.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I feel okay taking What We Do in the Shadows out just because I know that you guys haven't watched it. Mm-hmm. So what's that get us down to? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. 3 to go.
Can we take Prodigy out?
Yes. I also feel comfortable mm-hmm. dropping that.
Yeah, so out of the Star Treks, I know which one. Now let's take Discovery out. I know it's sacrilegious for this.
Well, we have a different category for Star Trek too, so people can vote on that.
That's true. Right, that's true. Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So we need to cut one more.
Three Body Problem? Do you think Three Body Problem? Maybe.
I think Echo is probably the.
Yeah, I think Echo is probably what I would take out here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. There we are. There's our top 10.
Or 10. Okay, cool. The best Star Trek series.
Star Trek series is easy, so there's just Discovery Season 5, Lower Decks Season 5, and Prodigy Season 2. Good luck to everything that's not Lower Decks. Best new TV show, I kept that as a category. Again, I think we've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14.
Wait, what's the difference between this category and the best TV show sci-fi?
It's an opportunity to recognize something that for example, if you were voting for, you know, Lower Decks season 5 as your favorite TV show, then you might choose something completely different for your
best new show. Okay. Well, by the same reckoning, let's get rid of Prophecy.
Yes. Goodbye, Dune Prophecy.
And the Acolyte.
Orphan Black.
Yeah. You know the bad guy in Section 31? He's the bad guy in Orphan Black.
I kind of want to leave the Acolyte there just to see if people vote for it.
All right. Okay. Time Bandits. Bye-bye.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a great concept, but I don't think it needed to be a TV show.
We had 11. Do we need one more?
Yes. One more. One more to go. Echo, Avatar.
Let's say it together. Three body problem.
you just didn't like it that much?
I love the three body problem as a book and concept and stuff, but I don't know. It didn't stand out as a great show.
Come on, they sliced a boat in half. They sliced a boat and its contents of people into little pieces.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. I don't remember that in the book, to be honest with you.
I
have to go back. I
think Echo is the one to go.
Yeah, I think Echo is a better one to remove first.
Yeah. All right, there's our top 10.
And now I think we're at 10, right?
Yep.
Yeah, so it slides in.
All right.
The best actor, the actor ones, we should get down to 5.
Okay. So again, this is a combination of television and movies because we did this in the past and we often don't have enough for one or the other. So I just, yeah. So Timothée Chalamet for Dune, Joel Edgerton for Dark Matter, Colin Farrell for The Penguin, Renzi Feliz, he's the guy who played his protege in The Penguin, Chris Hemsworth for Furiosa, Manny Jacinto for The Acolyte, Hugh Jackman for Deadpool and Wolverine, and Joe Locke for Agatha All Along. So we need to drop, what do we got here? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. We got to drop three.
I say
three.
We drop the, drop Renzi, because compared to Colin Farrell, yep. He's like, no chance.
Yeah, fine.
Two left.
Hey Siri, stop. What the hell was that?
She crazy.
And what did we just cut?
We just cut,
Renzi.
Oh, Renzi. Yeah, right. Please. I don't know how she got the S word out of that. Or what she was thinking she was playing. Anyway, go ahead.
I'm going to propose Joe Locke as the next cut.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Looking at this list.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then we need to cut one more.
One more?
Let's say it's somewhere for me between Hemsworth and Jackman.
I liked Hemsworth. He thought he was pretty good.
I thought he was pretty good as the villain. I liked that he was playing against type.
Manny Jacinto, I think, can go.
I don't know. I liked his performance in The Acolyte a lot.
Okay, fine.
Yeah, I'm...
Like, he actually was probably the only redeeming quality of that show was that he was great.
I mean, it doesn't have to be 5. We can. What is this? This 6 right now. Yeah. So,
how about Jackman? Do we feel like there was a anything special there? I mean, again, the problem is that if you rate this against like the Logan movie, like, come on,
you didn't find Hemsworth hilarious and Furiosa?
I did. I thought he was terrific. Mm-hmm. That's why I put him in here.
But, oh, okay.
I'm saying, I think right. Hugh Jackman is probably the one that I would cut if I was going to cut one more.
All right, let's cut him. Bye bye.
Go for it. Goodbye, Hugh. All right, best actress. Jennifer Connelly for Dark Matter, Emma Corrin for Deadpool and Wolverine, Cynthia Erivo for Wicked, we can take her right out now because we're not doing Wicked, Rebecca Ferguson for Dune, Catherine Hahn for Agatha All Along, Kristen Milioti for The Penguin, Demi Moore for The Substance, Anya Taylor-Joy for Furiosa, and Zendaya for Dune. We should probably cut one of the Dunes.
Who's the... Emma Corrin.
Emma Corrin was the one who played the... she played the bald villain. She was the bad guy.
Oh, she's the... Mm-hmm. Yeah, the...
I thought she was pretty good. Sorry, I should say...
Yeah.
I think she... I think they are a they. So, they.
Yeah, I get it. Yeah.
But, yeah, I would say Ferguson and Zendaya probably are splitting the difference, so we probably should pick one or the other.
Zendaya.
The day we should keep or lose?
Lose.
Lose. So, two more to go.
Looking here,
we could also lose Rebecca Ferguson too if we don't feel strongly about that. I'm just saying.
Yeah. What about Jennifer Connelly though?
Yeah, I was thinking Jennifer Connelly as well.
Yep. Okay.
Because we're talking about performance, not amazing looking.
One more to go. Emma Corrin, Rebecca Ferguson, Catherine Hahn, Kristen Milioti, Demi Moore, and Anya Taylor-Joy.
Well, I haven't seen Substance yet. I plan on seeing it, but don't know when.
I feel like it's for me between Rebecca Ferguson and Anya Taylor-Joy.
Yeah, I think Rebecca Ferguson is better off elsewhere. Like you might want her for Silo or something, but I don't know.
She wasn't as good in season 2. She didn't have enough to do.
Fair, but I don't know that I really think a lot about her for Dune, where I would think of Timothée Chalamet and Zendaya a lot more.
Yeah.
All right.
There's our five. Most anticipated movie of 2025. 28 years later, Avatar 3, Fire and Ash, Captain America Brave New World, Fantastic Four First Steps, How to Train Your Dragon, Jurassic World Rebirth, Mickey 17, a Minecraft movie, The Running Man, remake, Superman, Thunderbolts, and Tron Ares.
So, I would be okay leaving these, but I'd say How to Train Your Dragon.
This is at only 12, so we could cut a couple. How to Train Your Dragon is a live action adaptation.
I know. It's a remake of the great cartoon movie, but I haven't seen the rest of them. I didn't see anything beyond.
Is there
a Minecraft movie? I could care less.
Is there a number we want to get down to?
I don't know. Is 12? Do we want to get to 10?
I guess, but I mean,
I'm going to propose.
It's hard to say what people are anticipating it, but I'm not anticipating the Minecraft movie at all.
Yeah.
So, or the Tron one either. I don't know, but Tron.
Oh, I don't know. I thought the last Tron movie was interesting.
The Running Man can go too. That was a lame movie. Oh, it doesn't have Richard Dawson in it, so. It's a remake of the Richard Dawson.
Yes, it is. Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Schwarzenegger movie, right? Sure. That of its time was what TV was like, so.
All right. Well, I'm going to propose a Minecraft movie could go. Jaime, you feel okay with that?
Yeah, I think Minecraft can go.
And then one more. You want to do Running Man, or we can get rid of Jurassic World.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Sure.
Bye-bye.
Okay, there's our 10.
Don't let the door hit you on the way out.
All right. Most anticipated TV show, Alien Earth, Andor, Daredevil Born Again, Devil May Cry, Eyes of Wakanda, Invincible, Ironheart, Lanterns, that's the Green Lantern series on HBO, Marvel Zombies, The Sandman, Stranger Things, Wonder Man, and Your Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man. That one's kind of weird because we're already halfway through the season, so maybe we could just take that one out. It's a shame because it's good.
I think there's a really deep pit that the Lantern movie will have to climb out of to become...
They're basically doing space cops, right? Like approaching it.
Isn't that what they did in space? The cartoon animated spun off of Rick and Morty.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Oh, Solar Opposites.
Yes,
Solar Opposites. Thank you. Yeah.
I'm going to go ahead and get rid of Sandman season 2 because, sure, as we discussed, ew.
Yeah. No idea. I thought you were going to take... You're talking Spider-Man out or not?
Yeah, there's 12. Should we take Spider-Man out? Because it's already kind of...
Well, you just said it was halfway through.
It's in this sort of nebulous zone because it can't be anticipated because we're already halfway through. So, yeah, why don't we just get rid of that one? So, one more to go.
I don't know. What's Wonder Man? What's
that? That's the last Marvel TV show of the year. It's supposed to come out in, like, November, December, and it's about a character.
The one guy that grew up on the island with all the women?
No, it's about a character who's a stuntman who suddenly finds himself with powers and suddenly becomes a leading man. It's a pretty good comic concept, and it'll be interesting to see how that turns into a show. I'm probably looking forward to that one more than I would say a couple of the other things on here.
Like?
I'm probably looking forward to that one more than Marvel Zombies. And I'm probably looking forward to it more than Eyes of Wakanda.
Okay. Are you looking forward to Stranger Things?
I am.
All right.
It's the end.
So I would say I agree. I concur with Wakanda and Zombies. I don't really care about either of those two. Ooh.
And I guess
personally,
Jaime, I kind of like your thoughts on Devil May Cry because that's a big popular thing that's finally getting turned into a program.
If we're giving this a 10, I think we only need to remove one, right? So I would think Zombies and Eyes of Wakanda probably.
All right,
well, and give the other ones a little bit of a bone because I think Eyes of Wakanda and Marvel Zombies are going to fall into the what if category of, like, you know, nice but not necessarily anticipated.
Yeah. So Zombies or Wakanda? What do you feel like?
Zombies.
Zombies. My Zombies. And last but never least, best streaming service. This one we'll just leave as is, but yes, you can tell us what your favorite is. Come on, Tubi.
Should we put Crave and Hulu in the same, like, with a slash, because, or Max and Crave with a slash because they're pretty much the same thing?
I mean, that is where we get most of our Max content. Although, as we talked about, like, things like Creature Commandos,
it's not always the same.
Have gotten spun out. So,
but I mean, like, if we're looking at American voters versus Canadian voters, I don't know where our
Well, Disney Plus and Hulu are the same thing for us here.
Are they?
Yes. We get our Hulu content through Disney Plus here in Canada.
Right.
And then we get...
So let's ask the American. Would you vote for Hulu versus Disney, Jaime?
They're technically separate here, but Disney is pushing the bundle along with ESPN Plus so hard that I would be okay putting them together, especially because you can, in the interface, access Hulu from Disney Plus content. So I'm okay putting that together because it seems really clear they're trying to smush it together.
Well, yeah. And for ease of use, why don't we just slap Crave / Maxim?
And if we're keeping Tubi in, wouldn't we add the other one, which is begins with a P, and I can't remember what it's called?
Pluto, maybe, is what you're thinking of?
Pluto. Is it? Yeah, it's the other free one. Yeah,
we can add Pluto.
It has some sci-fi in it. Is that what it's called, Pluto TV? Yep. Yeah, Pluto TV, I think it's called, right?
All right. Well,
are those the same categories we had last year? All right, okay. I still think we should have worst. Mind you, we cut the worst ones out. People could listen to the show to find out what the worst ones were of the year.
Yeah, and obviously for our listeners, if there's something you vehemently disagree with or think that we're missing out on, we are not infallible in spite of our often perfect record in our fact check. So send us a feedback on Slack or hit us up on any of these socials and let us know if you think something desperately needs to be in here. But I think what we'll do is Tim will build us a ballot and we will get this thing rolling and we'll spread it around. Please tell several friends. We'd like to get a nice cross section and let's see how this turns out.
Yeah, cool. All right. And let's move on to the watch list.
So I've got a scene from Invincible. Where from the first season, this is the tail end of the first episode. So I guess spoilers for that if you have not caught up at all on that. But it's with Omni-Man versus the Guardians of the Globe. But somebody has traced over this and turned it into Superman versus the Justice League. It's kind of nifty to look at. I guess poor went out for the people who are Aquaman fans. They do you dirty in this one. But yeah, just thought it was timely because you've got Invincible Season 3 coming up.
That's right. And that was my pick for the watch list. I actually started watching that earlier this evening. I watched the first episode of Season 3. They've dropped the first three episodes on Amazon Prime. So you can dive right into that as soon as you like, and they are, I think, another five episodes that are still to come over the next 5 weeks. So, yeah, it'll be a short but sweet season. Love the series. Always loved it. It was one of my favorite superhero comic books of the early 2000s, and they've been pretty faithful in their adaptation of it as far as the style, as far as the tone, as far as the characters and stuff. So yeah, I've been actually really enjoying it and kind of looking forward to seeing some of these stories brought to life. And there's some really messed up stuff ahead for Mark. This is going to continue to be one of the most brutal yet bright and interesting comic book adaptations ever put to moving pictures. So I think it'll be interesting to see what people think after this season, because there's going to be some messed up stuff.
Well, I guess that's it for another week. So, hey, Jonathan, if people are in touch with you, where would they find you?
Well, you can find me on Instagram or Blue Sky at JPK News, or you can find me on YouTube at youtube.com/@JPK.
All right. And Jaime, if people want to get in touch with you, where would they find you?
I'm on Instagram as @devilthehair.
Well, my name is Tim Mitra, TimMitra, on the Blue Sky, on the Mastodon, on the Instagram. And yeah, so until next time, we'll see you in the future.
Bye.
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 You've been listening to the Spotcast Podcast. If you want to find out more about the podcast or see the episode show notes, visit the Spotcast website at spotcast.com. If you have feedback or questions, you can get in touch with us on the website. If you like the show, please consider recommending us to a friend, writing a review on iTunes, or pledging any amount at patreon.com/spotcast. You can find details on how to help us on our website, spotcast.com/sponsor us. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you in the future.
cards of Smurf trailer.
We did. I didn't see one came out, a new one, a new Smurf trailer.
Yeah, it says Paramount. I just got an email from Paramount. What? Only in theaters, July 18th.
We'll have to drop everything and get on that.
Whoa.
Yeah. Party. Yes, sir, eat Bob.
I'm very curious to see what is going to win some of these Spockies this year, what people are really taken to.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, there you go. Rihanna is Smurvette.
Sure.
That checks out. I mean, Paramount Pictures looks to be the channel, and it says Smurfs official trailer 2025 movie. Looks like this dropped 14 hours ago, and then it says Rihanna, which implies that they must have other character announcements, I guess.
Hmm. I don't know. Cool.
Our beloved sports franchises are doing battle as we speak. Kraken hosting the Leafs tonight.
Ooh.
Well, yeah. 2-0 Leafs in a second.
Yeah, it's been a rough entry into the league for the Kraken.
They look so promising in that first year.
Yeah, yeah. They had an interesting period where it's like, okay, they didn't score a lot of goals, but they have no defense. Okay, we're going to lose like 7-8. Okay. Yeah. And then they kind of sort of got it half together for like half a year where they could stop some goals, and they started doing well. And then they said, no, we don't know how to stop goals. So it's been very rough.
Yeah. It's funny how those things work. You know, sometimes you just strike, you know, like the Panthers did that when they entered the league. They came in and within like very short order, we're in the Stanley Cup final. And we saw that happen with Vegas, and you're like, wow, these guys have cracked the code. And then you get some teams that have entered the league that are, you know, been 20 years and they're still struggling, and it never really seems to be a, you know, perfect formula. But I mean, Golden Knights seem to do okay. They won a Stanley Cup already, which makes me very, very sad.
Yeah, that was the model template for what I think the league wants. You know, winning a Stanley Cup is not necessarily the goal, because that's unrealistic. You know, if it happens, yeah, it happens. But having, you know, a new team join, and the best way to bootstrap, you know, people putting butts in seats and buying merch and all that stuff is to be good enough to get interest.
Well, it's funny because I remember, you know, some of the rules used to be a little more restrictive. I remember when the Raptors first came into the NBA. They were forbidden from winning the draft lottery for like a certain number of years. So even if they won, they didn't get the first pick. And I think it was their second year or third year. I want to say second year in the league. They won the draft lottery in the year Allen Iverson was the first pick and should have gotten to draft Allen Iverson, who, you know, for non-basketball fans was an amazing player, and they were forbidden from taking that pick. So they got dropped down and ended up picking a guy named Marcus Camby, who turned out to be a decent NBA player, but like not an MVP like the other guy. And it's funny how the different leagues, some of them are trying to like protect the existing franchises a little bit by like not making the new teams too competitive too quickly. And sometimes things like the NHL are like, yeah, we don't want to make things terrible off the hop, because then we want people to buy into these places. You know, if they made Seattle and Vegas terrible, then fans wouldn't come and they would never make their money, right? So, yeah, it's catch 22.
So a big sports ball game this weekend?
So I'm told. I must admit, as a long-suffering Lions fan, I kind of held out hope that maybe this would be our year, and it wasn't, and now I kind of just want an asteroid to hit the stadium. So yeah, I'm hoping for a good Kendrick Lamar show and some commercials. Strangely, my son said to me that he would like to sit down and watch the game with me so that he can learn more about football. So that was a development.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's sat with me a couple times. I actually, again, the Lions were so good this year, they won 15 of their 17 games. I was like in heaven, because they've been awful for most of my life. And he sat down and watched a couple with me and said, I really don't think I understand this game very well, because I didn't really watch a lot of it in the first 20 years of his life. And so now he's kind of curious. So he wants to sit down and try and understand what's going on.
Sports curious.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's all I've ever wanted for my children, is to have them just be just a little bit sports curious. I don't want them to become insane fans, but just enough that we could sit and watch something like this and enjoy it together and not have it be
on those cold winter nights in New Brunswick?
New Brunswick, that's right. Well, I'll be home. I'm coming home tomorrow, so I'll be in the comforts of my now apparently half-empty home.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I got a, speaking of Star Wars glasses, I got picked up a box at the liquor store today. I was at the LCBO getting some beer. Mm. And I was walking out to do it, and some guy said, hey, can I have some of those boxes? And I went over, and Carol and I were talking about getting you so like a wine box that has compartments. Mm-hmm. And the one I found has very good corrugated cardboard. It's not just like the, you know, the floppy paper stuff.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
But this is actually corrugated board between them. So if you have like, it fits 12. I don't know how many glasses you have. You have more than that, right?
I do, but then I have 11 of the 12 original glasses, and then I have some extras that mom has found for me over the years. So most important to me is my 11 really good ones, and we'll figure out the rest from there.
Yeah, well, this will fit 12 at least, because it's a wine box thing, right? So perfect. And the bottle is not, like, the squares aren't that too big, so
yeah,
it'll be a good box to keep them in.
Cool. Yeah, I think... Yeah. The wife said that you guys were planning on coming back out this weekend at some point.
Well, one of us is, but I haven't been invited yet, but you know.
I mean, you're always welcome as long as it's my home, which it kind of still is.
Yeah, it depends on the DOJ, right? So.
Yes.
DOG, sorry. Not justice.
It's about the Department of Dogs? Yes, fair enough.
Yeah, she I took her to have her shots and blood work because she's getting the operation on Wednesday.
Right. Right. Yes. Yeah. Wow.
And I don't have to worry about dogs at the park anymore. Thank God.
Yeah. Let alone my friend here. May or may not have knocked up one of the.
We don't know yet, or there's no sign.
It's impossible to know. There's no physical symptoms of pregnancy in dogs for the first like month, and yet their pregnancy only lasts for like a little over two. So. The only ways you can tell in the first month is like their temperament changes.
Yeah.
And sometimes some dogs will get morning sickness. Her temperament has changed and she has had morning sickness. So we're presuming that is the case, but okay. We won't know for sure in the next like week or so, depending on obviously, cause they were kind of at it for a week. So it depends on when this may have happened. But the next sign would be that, she will start to visibly, her nipples will grow and all that kind of stuff. So we'll probably know in a short order. But
are you going over to Pat's quite often or?
I have been this week. I haven't because the weather's been kind of garbage. Yeah. So yeah. I have been mostly here. Last time I was there was on Sunday, but usually I'm there, you know, two or three days a week, just go over and bring Melvin for a run, or I'll go over and just, they've invited me over for dinner a few times and stuff like that. I didn't really need to go down this week because Pat's been down here at Adam's place working on some of the renovations and fixing stuff up. So she brings the girls out. So more often than not, I'm working and then I'll just go out at lunchtime and run the dogs. And then, Luna and Micah.
Okay, so. Yeah. Well, there are other girls in their environment these days, but.
Yes, Luna and Micah are coming for visits. They came for visits like three out of 4 days this week. So again, didn't really need to go down there, and it was a busy week, people working and stuff. So I didn't get down. I was going to go down tonight, but then it snowed yet again, another 5 centimeters of snow. So I'm going to drop Mel there in the morning, and then Pat's going to drive me to the airport, and he's going to stay with the girls for. For 9 days.
Leave your car there.
Yeah. Although Pat's going to be back up here doing work. So like, I think all three dogs and her are going to be here a fair bit too, but yeah, cool. It's good. Melvin sleeps very well when he's played.
Yeah. Well, that's the same. That's a trick with Sorcha too. Just, I take her to the park every day for a run with the other idiot dogs. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and here, yeah. I mean, I took them out at lunchtime. It was a little unpleasant, but I took them out at lunchtime and we were out for a good, you know, 30, 35 minutes and they ran and ran and ran and ran. And so, yeah, cool. Good.
All right. Can we wrap it up?
Yep. Sounds good.
Okay. Wrap it up.
I will probably see you sooner than later. And Jaime, I will talk to you next week.
Yeah. I, looking at my calendar, it looks like I am
unavailable next week. I do have a thing going on, so I will have to skip the 13th, unfortunately.
Okay.
Ready?
Alrighty.
Alright.
Alright, guys.
Take care, guys.
Where's the off button? Where's that off button? Make it stop.
Alright, bye.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to leave up holiday decorations year-round. Others have the need to use their garage as practice space for their new metal band. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.